To the Death on Draft podcast. I am your co-host, Corey Kinnon, alongside my other co-host, Dalton Miller. Again, we are at week 10 of the college football season now. Have plenty of content to talk about, have had plenty of content to talk about. We've given out helmet stickers this week. And as we always do on our Wednesday episodes, we're going to do some Dafter Draft this today. So we crowdsourced some questions for this week. So we've got two crowdsourced questions. And one... pretty particular and pertinent NFL topic today, as a bombshell dropped about the Colts benching a former top five pick just 10 games into his NFL career. But before we get into all of that, I'm going to bring in Dalton Miller. Dalton, welcome aboard. Great to see you again.
Yeah, I just noticed we're both kind of rocking the middle part. I don't know if that's on purpose or by accident. I don't know how you do your hair normally. I don't want to be rude, but I don't really take notice to your hair. It's also very light, so it's tough to see.
I think I've also worn a hat every single time we've recorded as well.
Oh, yeah, that would make sense. I don't see your hair that often.
So I'm growing it out. This is the first time in a while I've grown it out.
And you got to get through that awkward middle stage.
Yeah, it's we're in that middle stage, so I just tend to wear a hat all the time now.
No, that's fair. As you guys can tell, if you guys are watching this on YouTube, my eyes are still absolutely destroyed, so I'm going to continue to wear these clear sunglasses until that subsides. But other than that, I am doing well. Had a great workout today. Was really fired up when I saw the tweet from Adam Schefter that Anthony Richardson was getting benched. But I think we'll finish with that.
Yeah,
one. Let's get to, because I think that brings in a conversation of like NFL quarterback development from the NFL draft, just like generally as well. So let's get into it. Crowdsourced Daft or Drafts. Corey, this one is from Anthony Russo, Anthony_Russo97 on Twitter. Malachi Starks, Georgia safety / corner, and Xavier Watts, Notre Dame safety, are both top 20 players in this draft. Corey, are you dafting this or are you drafting this?
I'm dafting this. I think Malachi Starks is a top 20 player in the class, obviously. Even though I think he's been a little subpar with some of his angles and stuff like that in run support this year. But Malachi Starks is Malachi Starks. But I don't think Xavier Watts is anything more than an ordinary athlete for as intuitive and intelligent of a player that he is for me to draft this. So I still think he's probably like a mid-round safety in this class. Well, maybe not in this class, but in particular, like he's a guy who's going to get third, fourth, fifth round grades, in my opinion, just because that's the kind of athlete that I see. I see a pretty ordinary athlete, even though I do think he's an incredibly instinctive player. A very smart player and can kind of compensate, especially in the back end, kind of rangy by being anticipatory as well. It helps compensate for some of that capped out athletic ability, I would say. But no, I'm not gonna draft that.
As much as I want to draft this, because I do love Xavier Watts, I agree with you. I am probably higher. I'm not even probably. I am higher on him than you. And I think it comes down to just the way that I look at the safety and linebacker position relative to most other positions, especially defensively. At the NFL level, I think he is a back-end guy. I think that you use that playmaking ability and instinctiveness as a weapon on the back end, as either a quarters or as a single high free safety. I think that he can do it all because of that instinctiveness. I also think that safety position in general, that ball hawking skill, or even if it is a little bit lucky, it does tend to translate to the NFL level. There seem to be guys, Antoine Winfield Jr., and he makes his own luck when it comes to kind of his ability to get to the ball. But I also think that Xavier Watts puts himself in really good position at times. And I am just admittedly a sucker for Notre Dame defensive backs, specifically their safeties. and linebackers when it comes to their linebackers in coverage. I love Maurice Leofau last year. I think there's a it's very direct in the way that they play defense in their zone match schemes. They are, and not even just their zone match, but their man match, where it's I'm trying to think of the word. I keep saying going to direct, but direct isn't the word. It's with intent. Everything they do is with intent, and they want to keep guys close, but they also want to maintain zone leverages. And I just really enjoy the way that Marcus Freeman coaches those guys on the back end. And Watts is a guy who's been around now for at least 4 years, and he might even be a redshirt senior or fifth-year senior, but has a lot of ball production. I think he had 7 interceptions last year. He has at least 2 this year, and he should have had a 3rd, but it was called back earlier in the year. He's a playmaker. I also think that he is good and consistent as a defender as well. For me, he's a day 2 guy, but a day 2 guy is not a top 20 player in this class. If he had a little bit more juice, I could get there, but he doesn't quite have that top-end athleticism that, even though I love his play, that I can project being, you know, the caliber safety that is worth taking in the top 20.
Who would you say he's like athletically, in your opinion, like of an NFL safety that you could?
So for me, just like his overall play and his eyes remind me of Eddie Jackson.
Okay.
So I can't remember how good of an athlete Eddie Jackson was coming out, but same like ball hawking type of skill set on the back end that Eddie has.
Yeah, I was thinking like Kevin Byard, because Kevin Byard had a ton of ball production in his time in Tennessee. Like a player like that.
There was a time where he was the best free safety in the NFL.
Yeah, so I think we're kind of on the same page there about like, and Kevin Byard was like, I think, a 4-5 athlete, so he wasn't anything like explosive on the back end either. But again, you can make up for a lot at safety with unbelievable anticipatory, and that range is more anticipation than it is long speed.
That's the thing with safety, and that's the thing with linebacker. It doesn't matter if you run a 4-3 if you can't see what's happening and you can't react to what's happening in front of you. Devin White and who's the Iowa?
Josie Jewell.
Josie Jewell.
Yeah.
It's one is an NFL linebacker still, and the other one is
on a strapped in the top 5 and is now on the bench. Yeah.
It's on a practice squad.
Yeah. So, yeah, I agree. It's kind of the Kyle Hamilton thing too. So that's a bad comp, because we just said Xavier Watts isn't a top 20 pick, and I'm going to bring him up in the same conversation of a guy that I had as the top player in the 2022 class.
Another Notre Dame guy.
But Kyle Hamilton ran a 4.64, and people were like, oh my God, this guy is not athletic. This guy is not good. But like, you watch this tape and he's extremely rangy, because he knows exactly where the ball is going, and he can anticipate, and he can get sideline to sideline. But it's kind of like that, even though I don't think Xavier Watts and Kyle Hamilton are in the same tier of player.
No, they're not. They're not. The second daft or draft that we have here, we're going back to the tight end. Well, Colson Loveland will not be the first, second, or third tight end off the board. This is from Bill Sparks at Sparks Scouting on Twitter. And he had Fan and Helm and Lackey. I'm going to cut Lackey out there. I'm going to insert Tyler Warren from Penn State. That is Harold Fannin Jr. from Bowling Green. That is Gunnar Helm from Texas. And then Colson Loveland, Michigan tight end. Corey, daft or draft that Loveland won't be the first, second, or third tight end off the board?
I'm going to daft this one too. It's multifaceted. I think some team is going to love what Colson Loveland can do in his niche role, even if Loveland isn't going to be playing in line or blocking a whole lot. Like, we saw Evan Engram go in the first round. We saw Eric Ebron go in the first round. We've seen these athletic, pass-catching, big slots, guys who aren't going to throw their weight around in line, as long as they're explosive. And I was going to say consistent with their hands, but it took Evan Engram a while to get there, and he's still really not the most consistent with his hands. But as long as you're explosive, you can get open, and you can make things happen with the football in your hands after the catch. I don't really think NFL teams are going to care that much if you can block a whole lot in line. And again, we're kind of coming, the pendulum swinging back to, run the damn ball, blah, 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 blah. But like, at the end of the game, like, football is a lot more Jimmy's and Joe's than it is X's and O's, even as much as like us guys on film Twitter love to point out some really fun scheme wrinkles. And Colson Loveland is a guy that is going to make linebackers sweat. He's a guy that's going to make safety sweat. He's a guy that's going to make corners sweat. So I think that he's still going to be one of the first two tight ends off the board. I think one of the first three. We'll go with one of the first three just to still be able to adapt it. But I do think that there will be an appeal to some other tight ends in this class, specifically because we've talked so much about how so much about drafting a tight end is about athletic upside as well, and how there's a direct correlation to needing to be a top end athlete. And not that to say that Colson Loveland isn't, because he definitely is, I think, still a top end athlete, but Tyler Warren is an unbelievable athlete, and he's 6'6" and 260 pounds. Some NFL team is going to draft him very high just based on that. I don't know if Harold Fannin's going to declare. So like,
yeah,
that makes this tough as well. And then like Gunnar Helm is just so smooth. But again, I don't think Gunnar Helm's a top end athlete the way Tyler Warren is, but like he's a smooth mover. He separates really well because he does have good hip sync. He does have really flexible ankles, kind of the same way that Loveland does, even though Loveland's a much better athlete, and Helms can play him strictly in line and still do some stuff, and he'll block his ass off and things like that too. So I think those are the three tight ends we're really talking about. I'm going to leave Fannin out for now, just because it's so rare to see a three junior declare at the tight end position if they aren't like a Colson Loveland or a Brock Bowers, one of those guys that has massive P5 brand and name recognition. And I think we're probably going to see Fannin transfer up and go back for a fourth year comparatively to going to the NFL, I think. So I'm going to adapt it and say Loveland's probably still the first, but I could see a team really falling for Tyler Warren doing what he's going to do in Indianapolis at 6'6" and 260 pounds.
Yeah, I'm going to adapt this as well. I think that he's either the first or the second guy off of the board. And I think it comes down to what team is going to go for the tight end first. What team is going to go for the luxury pick first? Because I think Tyler Warren is a guy that, yes, you're going to want to draft and develop as an inline tight end. My issue with Warren
is that he can't block.
He can't block. He's 6'6" and he's 260 and he can't block.
But I think some team's going to say, like, this guy's a converted quarterback. You can teach him. Yeah.
It's been 4 years. You would like to see a little bit more development in that aspect, especially because he is so big and explosive. Mm-hmm. He just, like, even if technically he wasn't very good, I would still expect him to move people. And I just don't know if he has that instinct to him as a blocker. And part of that just probably comes from being a former quarterback. But as much as he throws his weight around at the top of routes to be able to get open, doesn't really do it as a blocker. So I do wonder if he gets knocked for that and then Loveland ends up being the first guy. I don't think Helm tests well enough to outdo those guys when it comes to draft capital, although I do think that he is the best tight end in this class. Fannin, just like you, I think that he probably ends up going back. Also coming from a P4 school and being very undersized doesn't bode well, even though his production is off the charts, even though he is the Deebo Samuel of tight ends. He is special as an athlete with the ball in his hands, but I do think that they will knock him for that, even though he went off against two P5 schools. There's some other stuff that you have heard and that I have heard in regards to him that will have to get worked out as well. Mm-hmm. In the interview process, if he declares or wherever he goes to school next year when he transfers up, and he should definitely get more than enough offers to make a lot of money next year, especially if he ends up breaking the tight end receiving record this year, which he is still on pace to do. That said, there is one more guy that I would like to bring up, and I haven't watched him yet in depth, but he keeps flashing at me. And I can't stop having my eyes go towards him. And that is Jason Taylor's son, Mason Taylor, at LSU. And it's not just the athleticism that I've seen from him. It's not just the ability as a pass catcher, even though his role as a pass catcher in that LSU offense is a bit unimaginative overall. Mm-hmm. The sideline work that he does is pretty outrageous. He is a great athlete. He has great sideline awareness. And he blocks his ass off, too. And as a three-year junior, I don't think that he declares. But if he declares, he is somebody who I'm going to immediately go to the tape and watch, because I think that it could be appointment television for myself personally.
Yeah. What I would hope is for some more production in the passing game. Like, he's on pace for a career year, but looking at his last five games, last four games, he's caught over three passes one time, you know? So it's tough to like, so I think you're right by saying he's not going to declare, and I don't know either, but
we've also seen that the NFL doesn't care at all about tight end production in college. Well,
that's also true. who's the Illinois dude who went third round last year just because he tested off the chart? Tip Ryman.
Yeah.
Went third round last year. Because again, we've talked about the tight end position really is so much about like, can you fit a role for me? Like Sam LaPorta is the perfect example of this in Detroit. Detroit took that dude 37th overall, 38th, yep. Top 40. They took him top 40. Sam LaPorta cannot block at all. At all.
Which is crazy for an Iowa tight. Well, actually, no fun. But yeah, he also played with TJ Hawkinson on the same field. So
to the point where, like, if they want to run the ball, they will bring on Brock Wright as their tight end to run the football. Like, it's that big of a tell that Sam LaPorta can't block, but yet he broke the rookie receiver record for a tight end, so it doesn't matter. Like, he is such an integral part of what they can do from the slot, flexed out, and is a mismatch that, like, it just doesn't matter that he can't block. So, and again, he went top 40 and not having a super well-rounded game, but being a dynamic pass catcher is good enough at the tight end position at the NFL level, especially in a creative, imaginative offense like Ben Johnson is currently running as well. Yeah. So find a guy who fits what you want. Tip Ryman, you could say the same thing about to an extent, is that the Cardinals run so much 12 and 13 personnel that, like, if you think he's a big enough body to create a mismatch, or you think you can put him on the end of the line of scrimmage as your like off ball in 12 personnel, 13 personnel, and that gives Trey McBride the opportunity to get downfield and still gives you a sixth man in the line of scrimmage, like, then you take that guy if you think you have a role for him. So, you know, that's just the nature of the position. But as we've talked about a lot, non-negotiables, you have to be athletic. Got to be athletic. So.
Yep. And we found that out with Thaddeus Moss.
Yeah.
Another former LSU tight end, also the son of a famous player. Let's go to the last adapter draft. And this one is a doozy, because this isn't just about the specific situation we're going to talk about, but about quarterback development in general. After draft, Corey, the Indianapolis Colts are doing the right thing by benching Anthony Richardson.
This is really tough.
There's so much nuance to this.
There's so much nuance to it. I'm going to draft it, though. Because I think what happened on Sunday is pretty inexcusable from a team captain and franchise quarterback, where he just tapped out for a play and said, I was tired. He probably should have lied, like learned to lie a little bit there. But he straight up said, I was tired, and he walked off the field. And to the point where, like, Ryan Kelly in press conferences is like, we're going to keep that conversation internal, but we talked about him, and he knows that that wasn't the standard that we expect from him. Like, veteran players in that locker room are saying things like that publicly to the media. And so I'm going to draft it, because you can't tap out on Anthony Richardson 10 games in. Like, when you drafted a 20-year-old who is a one-of-one athletic, like, freak, the most athletic quarterback we've ever seen, even more so than Cam Newton, has a massive arm, and you knew drafting him, like, this guy couldn't hit water out of a boat at Florida, and he played 12 college games his entire career. You still drafted him fourth overall. Like, you can't tap out on that after 10 NFL games. Like, you can't do it.
And not even 10 full NFL games.
No.
He's played eight games in total.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like, I'm gonna draft that they are doing right by him, because you have Joe Flacco, who is a first round pick, former first round pick, who has seen it. He's won a Super Bowl. He's been in locker rooms as frequently as my Browns last year on a super, super magical run last year. It depends because you don't know what the philosophy is inside. Was this Jim Irsay saying, no, I want to win now. So put the quarterback in who gives me the best chance to win now. If that's the case, then I'm dafting the crap out of this. And it always could be the case with Jim Irsay, but you have a second year head coach who I think is one of the more creative play callers in the league. And a quarterback who seemingly fits exactly what he wants in a quarterback based on what he did with Jalen Hurts in Philly.
Yeah.
I can't think that they're pulling the plug on Anthony Richardson. I think that they are giving him a beat, giving him a chance to take a breath, maybe a little bit of a growing up moment after the
tap out. he was tired, so they're going to give him a couple breaths.
Yeah, they're going to give him a couple breaths here. And then they say, listen, man, like, stay engaged in the meetings, stay engaged with Joe. We're not done yet. We obviously they can't, like, how can you give up on that after that short of a time? So, like, I'm gonna draft it without having the full picture of knowing exactly what's going on in that build. But I think this is preferable to what we talked about with Bryce Young of them throwing him out there, letting him get beat to shit, and then saying, like, ah, nah, it's time to pull the plug.
Yeah, and I think it's a different situation. Because the getting beat to shit is on Anthony Richardson and his inability to protect himself. It's less about the offensive line and receiving weapons and offense that he is in, because like we've already talked about, we believe that Shane Steichen is an offensive genius. What he was able to do in Philadelphia was outrageous. And what we've seen him do with some very underwhelming quarterbacks has been really good as well. When it comes to Anthony Richardson, when I first heard this, I got really angry. I got really angry because I look up to upstate New York and I look at Josh Allen, a guy who was terrible for two seasons and really didn't become the Josh Allen that we know now until he fixed some of the issues that he had in his own game in the offseason with Jordan Palmer. Mm-hmm. What we need with Anthony Richardson, what needs to happen, and it's tough to adapt or draft this because when jobs are on the line, and should Shane Steichen's job be on the line? Absolutely not. But we don't know what the discussions are like in that building. We don't
know.
But
we do know who the owner is.
Yes, yeah. We don't know how pissed off the owner was when he heard that his quarterback tapped out. Because like you said, that's pretty inexcusable to do. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if you're tired. You are the quarterback.
Team captain.
You're not a running back. You're not an offensive tackle that got rolled up on or a receiver who just ran seven straight routes. Like, you're the quarterback. And yes, a big run will get you tired. But Lamar Jackson ain't tapping out unless he's got to shit himself, which we've seen him have to do from time to time.
Yeah,
because he's got the immune system of...
I wonder what that guy's diet's like. I gotta know.
It's gotta be horrific. Like. Right? It's gotta be horrific. Or he has to just like legitimately have an immune system compromisation. Anyways, back to Anthony Richardson. I would love to see him on the field and playing because I do think he needs the live bullets. But at the same time, he's a different case than somebody like Justin Fields. He's a different case than somebody like even Bryce Young, who had the college experience. He doesn't have the experience, but he flashed the process that we want to see from a high-end quarterback. Mm-hmm. His issues are less above the shoulders and more with the shoulder and the inaccuracy and some of the not in-play quarterbacking, but just like boneheaded moments. Mm-hmm. That we have seen from him, careless mistakes that we have seen from him in the past couple of weeks, where maybe he does need a little bit of Quinn Ewers treatment. Hey, go chill on the sideline for a bit. Come back when things cool off a little bit. Maybe they are just trying to take the pressure away from him right now while they're still contending for the playoffs. That won't last forever. And then once they're done and out of contention, he'll come back in and he'll get some of those live rounds And hopefully in the offseason, he gets with a good, solid coach. Mm-hmm. Maybe he goes to House. Maybe he goes to Palmer. But let's fix some of those mechanical issues. And let's get not accurate, because I don't think it'll ever be super accurate, but Josh Allen fixed his accuracy issues. And I literally watched Josh Allen throw the ball 17 rows deep at Ladd Peebles, where he was not throwing the ball away. So we are talking about a very similar player, but like you said, a one-of-one athlete. Still, I believe, the youngest starting quarterback in the NFL.
Youngest. I think Caleb Williams is the only.
Is Caleb Williams younger?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the second youngest quarterback in the NFL.
He is younger than Shador Sanders and Garrett Nussmeier, and is 3 days older than Cam Ward. So, guys drafted who are going to be drafted 3 years after he was drafted.
You don't give up on a one-of-one athlete who's still, what, 21 years old?
22, yeah.
22?
Yeah.
You don't give up on that yet.
I agree. I agree. Because, I mean, there are so many teams out there that would trade for him, like today.
Yeah.
Or next week. And the Colts don't have any leverage to hold any value, like, on a trade market right now as well. No. So, like, this is different than I think it's probably most similar to Trey Lance, except that Trey Lance was always hurt, never got the opportunity to get the live reps because he was never healthy.
Yes.
But I think that's probably the situation that we could compare this most to. But even then, like, where, because Trey Lance played literally one season of college football as well, and then the COVID year he opted out. FCS had the spring season that year, so he didn't have a chance to play, except that one exhibition game. So I think that's probably the closest thing we have to this. And then I would agree to an extent that, like, yes, he needs live reps. He has played 22 games of football since high school. Like, that's not a lot of football since high school. But I also think there is some sort of, like, something's rattling inside of his head right now. Like, something is rattling inside his head right now. And I think they need to, like, give him a second to figure out what that is. And then.
And I'm becoming further radicalized on the notion that quarterbacks just need to sit for a while anyways, because it seems like every time we've seen a quarterback sit and wait in the wings, it's turned out to go pretty well. And not just that, but we have seen the resurgence of players who we thought were never going to play again. Look at Geno Smith right now.
Baker Mayfield, Geno Smith.
Baker was a little bit different of a situation, because I thought that he would be okay if he wouldn't have played through that shoulder injury.
Yeah, he zoned up to a lot of that as well.
Because I think it really screwed him up mechanically, having to compensate for that injury. Yeah. And then he was just legitimately bad for a while.
He also refused to work with a quarterback coach during his time in Cleveland. I know a lot about this because I lived through it and I covered it. But he refused to work out with the quarterback coach. The Browns wanted him to shut it down and get surgery. They probably would have paid him, even not playing the rest of that season, had he shut it down and gotten surgery.
Baker's a tough guy.
He's a tough guy. And then I think the Carolina stuff was a huge wake-up call for him when he was benched for PJ Walker and went through all of that to realize, like, oh, no, I do need some outside assistance.
When you're benched for PJ Walker, you know that you need to do some soul-searching.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And we're seeing Tampa Bay benefit from it right now.
Yeah. I think Baker's still the Baker that he was in 2018, 2020 with Cleveland.
Yeah,
I think he's always the player that he's been, but, like, he's fine. Yeah, mm-hmm. But yeah.
So I do think if you have the opportunity, if you have a veteran, again, like Carolina did with Andy Dalton, who was a better player than Bryce Young, start that guy. Let the young guy sit and wait. You're not competing. Doesn't matter. Let him go out there, sit on the bench, and not get killed. And if he has to come in for the starter who gets injured, then you have to insert your rookie. You have to insert your second-year guy. But I do think allowing these guys to sit and develop is swiftly becoming the better option.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to put my foot in my mouth real quick, because it looks like Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams, to an extent, are playing some pretty good football. Bo Nix has started to play better football since just a horrific start to his campaign in Denver. And so we are seeing some decent quarterback play from rookies this year. But Jaden Daniels also played like 70 college football games. Mm-hmm. He was a college football player for a long time. Caleb Williams played as a freshman at Oklahoma. Like, he's played a lot of football. Bo Nix was in college for like 7 years between Auburn and Oregon. So these guys are guys who have played a lot of football in their college careers. And you talk out of both sides of your mouth a little bit when you say, well, they need live bullets, but then they also need to sit. But I do think there is something to being able to sit and learn and sponge from a veteran quarterback that you have on your roster. But you have to, again, have that veteran on your roster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think Bill Parcells, people think that that methodology was a little outdated where he only liked senior quarterbacks. But, you know, maybe Bill Parcells was onto something there. Because, again, like, I'm trying to think of a quarterback in recent memory who came after very inexperienced time at the college level and thrived in the NFL. Like,
it doesn't happen.
Mitch Trubisky started like 12 games.
Yeah.
DeShone Kizer, which DeKizer was a second round pick and also couldn't hit water out of the boat at the college level. But like another one who had 1 year of starting experience and came to the NFL. It happens a lot. Trey Lance. We talked about Trey Lance.
Yep. It doesn't work.
No.
Because part of it is they have such a steep learning curve because they played 8 to 12 college football games, and you're practically going from high school to the NFL at that point because you're just not experienced enough. And so there's part of that. And I think the other part of it now, especially with NILs, there's just no point. If you're not going to be like a top 10 pick, and even if you are going to be a top 10 pick, staying in school for 4 years might be the better option at this point, and getting the reps might be the better option at this point, unless you are a Caleb Williams type of quarterback prospect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm there. I think I'm fully there that you need a bridge quarterback on your roster, unless your quarterback that you've drafted
has. And it's not like those guys don't exist. No. They're there. They're around.
And even I would even go back to like, there's a lot of quarterbacks in this class in particular that have also started a lot of games. Shedeur Sanders has started a lot of games. Cam Ward has started a lot of games. I would still have a bridge quarterback for both of those guys.
Yes.
Next year, because of the systems that they've kind of played in the style of like Shedeur Sanders, it's going to take Shedeur Sanders a lot of time to start to learn to trust protection again and to step into pockets like consistently again. It's going to take Cam Ward a lot of time to learn how to play in structure and to operate in NFL offense without running around and tossing up balls into double cut. Like we've seen quarterbacks try to do that and hasn't gone well at the NFL level. So I think any quarterback that you take in this class as well is going to need a bridge at least for a year based on the context of, even though they've played a lot of college football, based on the context of college football that they've played, like it's going to take them some time.
Yeah. And again, those guys are around. These quarterbacks are able to play until they're damn near 40 at this point. So your Joe Flaccos are around. Your Jameis Winstons, who, God, I hope that he ends up finding a place to actually start, because the NFL is more fun with Jameis Winston.
I'm telling you, your ideal situation is draft Shedeur, bring back Jameis.
And your Gardner Minshews exist. Like, those guys are out there. Mm-hmm. Andy Dalton's. These guys exist out there to be a bridge. And so please, NFL franchises, utilize those guys.
Yes. Yes. Indeed.
That's it. That's all I got. We can get out of here.
Yeah, I think that's all I got too. Man, that was a good episode. That was a good little last segment right there too.
It was a little quarterback development talk. I'm always down for it.
Love it. But all right, I think that's it for this Wednesday edition. We talked a lot about the tight end class and quarterback development. So again, this has been the Daft on Draft podcast. If you are listening on Apple or Spotify, please subscribe and please like, give us some reviews. If you are listening on YouTube, again, subscribe. Subscribe to the Substack. Do what you got to do. Appreciate all of the support we're getting. We're getting up there in daily listens, so I'm pretty excited about that. continuing to try to figure out the branding side of things. I'm not very good at that, but I've launched Daft on Draft independently now. So I need to, I'm trying to pick up on some of that stuff too. So, yeah, but that's it for the Daft on Draft podcast. And until tomorrow, I'm Corey. That's Dalton.